2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. People should be rewarded according to ability, not according to age and experience. Young men and women today are finding it more and more necessary to protest against what is known as the establishment, that is, the people who wield power in our society. Clashes with the authorities are reported almost daily in the press. The tension that exists between old and young could certainly be lessened if some of the most obvious causes were removed. In particular, the establishment should adopt different attitudes to work and the rewards it brings. Today's young people are ambitious. Many are equipped with a good education and are understandably impatient to succeed as quickly as possible. They want to be able to have their share of the good things in life while they are still young enough to enjoy them. The establishment, however, has traditionally believed that people should be rewarded according to their age and experience. Ability counts for less. As the establishment controls the purse strings, its views are inevitably imposed on society. Employers pay the smallest sum consistent with keeping you in a job. You join the hierarchy and take your place in the queue. If you are young, you go to the very end of the queue and stay there no matter how brilliant you are. What you know is much less important than whom you know and how old you are. If you are able, your abilities will be acknowledged and rewarded in due course. That is, after 20 or 30 years have passed. By that time, you will be considered old enough to join the establishment, and you will be expected to adopt its ideals. God help you if you don't. There seems to be a gigantic conspiracy against young people. While on the one hand, society provides them with better educational facilities, on the other, it does its best to exclude them from the jobs that really matter. There are exceptions, of course. Some young people do manage to break through the barrier despite the restrictions. But the great majority have to wait patiently for years before they can really give full rein to their abilities. This means that in most fields, the views of young people are never heard because there is no one to represent them. All important decisions about how society is to be run are made by people who are too old to remember what it was like to be young. Resentment is the cause of a great deal of bitterness. The young resent the old because they feel deprived of the good things life has to offer. The old resent the young because they are afraid of losing what they have. A man of 50 or so might say, "Why should a young rascal straight out of school earn more than I do?" But if the young rascal is more able, more determined, harder working than his middle-aged critic, why shouldn't he? Employers should recognize ability and reward it justly. This would remove one of the biggest causes of friction between old and young, and ultimately, it would lead to a better society.
2. Officialdom. ancient Chinese reformers advocated selecting all talented people to be officials, regardless of their family backgrounds. This practice is still significant, for it opposed appointing people by favoritism. But it is improper for us to think that the talented can only become officials, otherwise they are stifled. In the course of the current reform, China needs talented personnel in all trades. It is justifiable that talented personnel bring their ability into full play by becoming leaders. But the point is, who can be considered talented? Some see the holders of senior professional titles as talented. Some think of those who have college diplomas as talented. Some say that they are those who have made inventions or outstanding contributions to society. There would not be enough vacancies if all of these people were to become officials. It is unnecessary for all the talented to elbow their way into officialdom. They can strive to become experts in philosophy, science, literature, art, history, and education. There is never a limit to the number of experts in these fields. Albert Einstein was once invited by Israel to become its president. It was considered a matter of course for Einstein to accept the invitation. But Einstein refused it bluntly and continued his physics study. I do not mean that talented people should not become officials at all. But what I want to specify is that different people have different strengths, and that not everyone is capable of becoming an official. If people without leadership capacity are chosen as officials, they can only bungle things. Before Hou Yuzhu and Zheng Meizhu, two aces of the Chinese national women's volleyball team, retired, they were asked by reporters if the government would assign them jobs in a leading body, just as it had done for some of their former teammates. Hou and Zheng, who shared the credit for the team becoming world champions, responded that they did not want to become officials, and that they wanted to study the knowledge and skills needed in society to keep abreast of its development. Their decision may be of some help to us.
3. You can get promoted half a grade if you are willing to say, "Yes, sir," "No, sir." An unhappy victim of the consumer society is Mr. Bhatia, a 52-year-old Indian journalist working in broadcasting. For him, however, the misery is caused less by the nature of his work than by the competitive atmosphere which surrounds it. Mr. Bhatia, I'm not interested in my job. I'm not being treated properly, and there are many injustices. I just do honest work, but I do as little as I can. The atmosphere is very polluted. You can get promoted half a grade if you're willing to say, "Yes, sir," "No, sir." I've been there 23 years, and I hate the whole mentality of the place. They treat me like a colonial. They think I live in the colonies, but I've done things in journalism that have never been done before. I have a colleague who is half a grade up, and when the boss is away, he's supposed to officiate. I've had rows with him. I have a hot temper. I said to him, "Look, don't you try to boss me, or one of us will end up on the floor. I've met good Englishmen and bad Englishmen. And you're the worst Englishman I've ever met. I'm honest and outspoken, and people don't like me. Nobody likes me. If you're a crook, you can get on well.
Lesson 22. Should capital punishment be a major deterrent to crime? Text. Capital punishment is the only way to deter criminals. Perhaps all criminals should be required to carry cards which read, Fragile, handle with care. It will never do, these days, to go around referring to criminals as violent thugs. You must refer to them politely as social misfits. The professional killer who wouldn't think twice about using his kosh or crowbar to batter some harmless old lady to death in order to rob her of her meager life savings must never be given a dose of his own medicine. He is in need of hospital treatment. According to his misguided defenders, society is to blame. A wicked society breeds evil, or so the argument goes. When you listen to this kind of talk, it makes you wonder why we aren't all criminals. We have done away with the absurdly harsh laws of the 19th century, and this is only right. But surely enough is enough. The most senseless piece of criminal legislation in Britain and a number of other countries has been the suspension of capital punishment. The violent criminal has become a kind of hero figure in our time. He is glorified on the screen. He is pursued by the press and paid vast sums of money for his memoirs. Newspapers which specialize in crime reporting enjoy enormous circulations, and the publishers of trashy cops and robbers stories, or murder mysteries, have never had it so good. When you read about the achievements of the great train robbers, it makes you wonder whether you are reading about some glorious resistance movement. The hardened criminal is cuddled and cosseted by the sociologist on the one hand, and adored as a hero by the masses on the other. It's no wonder he is a privileged person who expects and receives VIP treatment wherever he goes. Capital punishment used to be a major deterrent. It made the violent robber think twice before pulling the trigger. It gave the cold-blooded poisoner something to ponder about while he was shaking up or serving his arsenic cocktail. It prevented unarmed policemen from being mowed down while pursuing their duty by killers armed with automatic weapons. Above all, it protected the most vulnerable members of society, young children, from brutal sex maniacs. It is horrifying to think that the criminal can literally get away with murder. We all know that life sentence does not mean what it says. After 10 years or so of good conduct, the most desperate villain is free to return to society, where he will live very comfortably, thank you, on the proceeds of his crime, or he will go on committing offences until he is caught again. People are always willing to hold liberal views at the expense of others. It's always fashionable to pose as the defender of the underdog, so long as you, personally, remain unaffected. Did the defenders of crime, one wonders, in their desire for fair play, consult the victims before they suspended capital punishment? Hardly. You see, they couldn't, because all the victims were dead.
2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. Can you turn him into a good guy? Why don't I give you a lift home if you live on the new estate? I'd appreciate that very much, he replied. I fetched my car from the parking lot, and he got in with many thanks. He said no more till we were well across the heath. Then, all of a sudden, he turned to me and said, "Okay, pull up here." "Here?" I queried. There was not a house in sight, and the weather was shocking. Anyway, I pulled up. The only thing I could remember after that was something thumping down hard on my head. I passed out. When I came to, I was sprawled in the ditch, soaked to the skin, my head pounding, my car gone, and my pockets empty. I staggered off and eventually tumbled into the police station to make a report. There was a light shining on the station wall, and there, lit up, was a picture of my assailant. I had walked past it for the last 7 days. I knew I had seen the face before. He was wanted by the police for armed robbery. I thanked my lucky stars it was not for murder. I looked at the name underneath the face I will never forget. It was, oh bother, I can never remember names.
2. Murderers must be hanged. Murderers are cruel, sadistic monsters. They must be hanged. What they do puts them beyond the pale of humanity. They are not humans, and therefore they cannot expect to be treated as humans. They must be made to see the error of their ways, and the only way of doing that is by hanging them. British justice is the finest in the world. But by not imposing the death sentence, people will think we are failing to punish crime justly. It is the principle of justice itself that is at stake. How can we claim to be a just nation if people who murder are not themselves executed? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is the very basis of justice. Some people claim that hanging is cruel, but it is more humane than the other penalties at present imposed. It is quick, and thanks to modern methods, painless. It is only the agitators who campaign against the death penalty who say it is cruel. The reality is that it is a kindness to the murderer. Far better to be hanged than to suffer the slow torture of life imprisonment, which is in any case a burden on the long-suffering taxpayer. There are other objections to life imprisonment. There is the chance that the murderer may escape. He or she would then be free to murder again. Nor is life imprisonment what it says. It is only a nominal sentence. In no time at all, the murderer will be released. How can the ordinary person feel safe, knowing that there are murderers on the prowl seeking their next victim? The crux of the matter is that only hanging acts as a deterrent to murderers. In the past, many a would-be murderer must have refrained from committing this heinous crime, knowing that such an act would result in certain execution. Put yourself in his or her shoes. You would not commit murder, knowing that the penalty for so doing was death. It is the same with murderers. So-called liberals point to the experience of other European countries where the death penalty has ceased to exist. But what happens in those countries is no guide to what may happen here. It is our safety that is at risk, not theirs. Only the return of the death penalty can ensure that we can sleep safely in our beds.
3. Mediation system helps deter crimes. Ye Cheng Mei of Guojiahe Town, Xinjiang County, in central China's Henan Province, was beaten by her husband, Pan Chenggong, over a trifling matter. Ye's brother mobilized 14 young men with wooden sticks and spades to teach his brother-in-law a lesson. Hearing the news, Pan Chenggong organized more than 20 young men to fight back. At this critical moment, 59-year-old Ye Bingyan, a mediator, appeared and persuaded the men to stop the fight and sit down to talk. Under the mediator's persuasion and his discussion of the law, Pan admitted his wrongdoings and went to the home of his wife's parents to make an apology. This is one example of China's people's mediation system, which has become a major method of settling civil disputes concerning marriage, family relations, housing, money, and property issues. China now has more than 1 million mediation committees, with over 6 million mediators. From 1982 to 1988, they settled 50 million civil issues. Up to 10 times the number of cases went to court. In Henan Province alone, more than 287,000 mediators from 53,642 People's Mediation Committees have dealt with 5,723,657 cases, preventing losses for 51,343 people. The mediators enjoy popular support and respect as they report the views, complaints, and wishes of the populace to grassroots governments and pass along the government principles, policies, laws, and regulations to the masses. The villagers speak highly of Ye Bingyan's work. They say wherever and whenever disputes happen, Ye will be there. He has prevented 15 gang fights, saved the lives of 14 people threatened with homicide or suicide, and also helped 5 couples reunite. Ye said the key to his work is concern and love for others.
4. Why was she set free? An armed robber walked free from the Old Bailey after a kind-hearted judge heard how a nightmare attack she endured in London had turned her to crime. Rachel Farrington of Maypole Road, Sheepbridge, Huddersfield, was only 16 when she left Yorkshire and went to London with her boyfriend. A year later, she was threatening to shoot a gang of drug dealers while her accomplice, a hardened criminal, tied them up. The 19-year-old pleaded guilty to robbery, having an imitation firearm and aggravated burglary on July 5, 1986. But the judge deferred sentencing for 6 months and told her to go home. I had intended to impose a sentence of 2 years in prison, said Recorder James Crespi, QC. Your co-defendant was lucky to get only 6 years. But I am reluctant to send you to prison. You were extremely young. You came to London and got involved with drug dealers. Go back to Yorkshire. Try to get a job and lead a sensible life. The judge was told that Rachel found herself involved in London's drug underworld soon after she arrived. She met a man involved with drugs, who became her new boyfriend, said her defense counsel, Mr. Stephen Leslie. Within a month, the relationship had turned ugly, and she finally left after a horrifying attack. She bore a grudge, but because of things that had happened earlier, she did not report it to the police, said Mr. Leslie. Rachel found a new friend, Garnet Gibson, who proved equally dangerous. He was 10 years older than her and had been in prison many times. When she told him what she had endured in the attack by her ex-boyfriend and his associates, Gibson told her she could get her revenge, and Rachel agreed. Except for the grudge, this was completely out of character, and she was completely out of her depth, said Mr. Leslie. The couple burst into a flat in North London, where Gibson, armed with an air pistol, ordered Rachel to tie up the three men found inside. But the inexperienced girl did such a poor job of it that Gibson handed her the gun while he tied up the men. The victims soon realized Rachel was helpless, despite her threats to shoot them, and they fought back. She was brushed aside by one man, and finally she just walked out of the flat and threw the gun away. Gibson was soon overpowered by the men, and police were called in. Rachel admitted everything to the police and was bailed, but she fled to Portugal and did not return until a month after Gibson's trial. He was jailed for 6 years in July last year. Rachel was rearrested as she entered Britain. Her mother had sent her the fare home so that she could return for medical treatment for a cyst. The court heard that Rachel was one of 9 children and was from an excellent family. Her mother, Mrs. Mary Farrington, told the judge that her daughter had got out of hand after her father died of cancer, and Rachel lost her job through illness. She said, "I have a home for her, and the family is willing to help her in any way we can."
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听啊，点儿看。